Hey guys, welcome to episode 3 of Locked On Orioles, where it's all O's all the time. I'm your host, Justin McGuire, and if you haven't listened to our past episodes, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a veteran journalist who spent 8 years as a senior editor at Sporting News, including 3 years as Major League Baseball editor for SN. I'm a Sabre member, and I have another podcast called Baseball by the Book, which you should definitely check out. The most important thing, though, is I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Joining me today is Luke Seiler, who's a prospect writer for OrielsHangout.com. He's going to talk to us about his ranking of the top 10 Orioles prospects for 2018. We'll get to that in just a second, but first I wanted to mention that we are now available on Apple Podcasts, so please go and subscribe and leave a rating and review. That last part is really important. If we want to build an audience for this thing, we're going to have to get seen, and the best way to get seen on Apple Podcasts is to have lots of positive ratings. So please go on, if you feel like it, and leave us a 5-star review, and just write a few words saying how much you like the podcast and how much you'd like to see it keep going, that kind of thing. It takes about 2 minutes, really. It's not a big time commitment. So anybody who could do that, I really would appreciate it. Also, I wanted to mention, if you're interested in sponsoring Locked On Orioles, or if you have any suggestions for topics or guests, please drop me a line at lockedonorioles@gmail.com. Okay, let's get to our talk with Luke Seiler. Hey guys, we're joined now by Luke Seiler. He is a prospect writer for Orioles Hangout. You can check them out at OrielsHangout.com. And Luke, I'll give you a chance to give your Twitter handle in a little bit. We're here to talk. You recently wrote an article for Orioles Hangout ranking the Orioles' top 50 prospects at this point in 2018. And so we're not going to have a chance to talk about all 50 of them right now, but I did want to get into some on the top 10, just give your summation of each of these 10 guys and what we might be looking for this season, when we might expect to see them in the majors, that kind of thing. Before we get into all that, though, I wanted to just ask you quickly, the Orioles, the Orioles are off to an 0-3 start in the Grapefruit League. And obviously, it's spring training. We don't want to put too much onto it. That ultimately doesn't matter. But, you know, it's obviously discouraging that they haven't played well so far. You want to give me just a couple of quick thoughts on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, well, you know, early in spring training, like you said, it's not good to put too much credence on how they're playing now. I like to watch the guys that are fighting for a spot on the team rather than the veterans out there because, you know, those guys are just trying to get their work in, get ready for the season, stay healthy. But the guys that are really fighting for spots, those are the guys that you want to pay attention to. I caught the first spring training game, and my quick thoughts on it is Mike Wright, who's, you know, down to his kind of last chance to make a name for himself or get on the roster. He didn't really look too sharp to me. His stuff looked a little flat. He was working on a cutter, but it wasn't really missing any bats. He was all around the high 80s to low 90s range, so it wasn't fooling anyone. So that wasn't too good. One guy that I saw that I liked that I hadn't seen before was Jolie Rodriguez. He was a non-roster invite. He's competing for a left-hand relief role. As you probably know, that's a spot that's not really nailed down on the Orioles roster. And he was showing a fastball that sits at 95 from the left side that he commanded well, and a couple of pretty good sweeping sliders to keep hitters off balance. So he's a guy to watch, and I think he has a decent shot at competing for that role along with Donnie Hart and a few others.
Yeah, interesting. Like you said, this is a time of year when that's really what we're looking for is those guys who might fill in those last roster spots, particularly in areas like the bullpen, which it tends to be such a crucial area for the Buck Showalter managed Orioles. The starting pitching is such a question mark that anybody who's going to be in the bullpen could be key to the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at who the Orioles have in the rotation currently, you have Tillman, who's really a question mark coming off of his 2017 season where his shoulder was a mess and he lost his release point and he was getting hit all over the place. So we don't know if he's going to be back. It'll be interesting to see when he gets out there later this week to see how he's looking. But with him, you know, and you have the fifth rotation spot that's still completely up for grabs. So we're waiting for someone to see if they can go and snag that and lock it down. But, yeah, the bullpen's going to be very important.
Yeah, okay, for sure. Yeah. All right, well, let's shift gears here and get to the topic at hand, which is top 10 Orioles prospects by your ranking. As I said, this came out, I guess, last week or so on OriolesHangout.com. Yeah. So if people want to check that out, you can find it, and I'll put it in the show notes as well, a link to that list. So like I said, there's 50 of them. We're not going to have time to get to all 50 in a brief podcast conversation. Maybe as the season goes on, we might look at more in depth at some of the guys further down the list. But for now, let's look at these top 10 guys. We'll start real quick with number 10 is left-handed pitcher Tanner Scott.
So Tanner Scott, the Orioles drafted him in the sixth round in 2014. He was a junior college pitcher. He's been primarily pitching in relief with the Orioles. In 2017, they tried a new approach. They let him make three-inning starts on a regular schedule. And this was to try and allow him to get more work in on his secondary pitches, especially his slider, and also to get a regular bullpen session between game outings. So Scott was a guy who, you know, he has a blistering fastball. About as hard as you'll see from the left-hand side other than Chapman. I've seen him touch 102 miles per hour, and he comfortably sits 97 to 99, even in three-inning outings. But he doesn't know where it's going a lot of times. So he improved in 2017 with his control, and if it takes another step forward, he's a guy that could be a closer for you, a closer for the Orioles very soon. But right now, he has trouble throwing strikes. That's going to have to continue to improve. Right now, it looks like you might see him mid-season or so, if the Orioles have an injury or anything like that.
Where do you think he's going to start the season?
He's going to start in AAA Norfolk.
Okay.
For sure, and he's going to be still on that three-inning schedule, which is going to allow him to, you know, see more batters, have more time to work on his mechanics, work on his command, and tighten up his slider, which has already improved a lot in 2017. I mean, it's gone from a below-average pitch to, you know, a near-plus pitch for him. And, you know, with a little bit of improvement in control, he's not going to be a guy that's ever going to be, you know, pinpointing the ball where he wants it. But he doesn't need to. He's got nasty, nasty stuff. He just needs to be close to the plate, and he's going to do really well.
Okay, well, let's move on to number 9. It's another left-handed pitcher. It's Alex Wells. Let's talk a little bit about him.
So Alex Wells, it's a great segue from Tanner Scott. He's the polar opposite. He's a young guy that the Orioles signed out of Australia in 2015. He was 18 years old at the time. And he is one of the better command and control pitchers you're going to see in the minors. He hardly walks anyone. He went, I believe it was 60 or 70 innings last year without walking someone in the second half of the season. But he doesn't have a lot of stuff. His fastball is only in the high 80s. So he really has to move his pitches around to all quadrants of the plate, and uses average curveball and above average changeup to keep hitters off balance. There doesn't look like there's going to be a lot more velocity coming, so he's going to have to be one of those crafty lefties that stays one step ahead of hitters, and uses deception and command to get guys out.
And realistically, if things were to go well for him, you know, when might be the earliest we would see him in Baltimore?
So I know Duquette has been talking Wells up a lot. You know, if you've seen any of the spring interviews, you know, about a guy that could help soon. I would throw a little cold water on that. He was in low A Delmarva last year. So I'd be happy if he finishes strong, you know, he makes it to double A this year. You know, so I think he can help the Orioles maybe 2020, late 2019 at the earliest, I would think, unless they're really trying to push him.
Okay, let's move on to number 8, and I'm sensing a theme here. This is another left-handed pitcher, Keegan Aiken.
So Keegan Aiken, the second round pick in 2016, start off real strong in 2016, and the Orioles rewarded that by skipping him over low A and started him in Frederick, high A ball. He had some struggles early in the season. It looked like he came into shape, came into camp a little out of shape, and he had trouble finding his mechanics and throwing the ball where he wanted it to. But later in the year, he improved, and he got sent to the Arizona Fall League, where he looked very good. He throws four pitches, a fastball, two-seam and four-seam, a slider, and a changeup. And they all have a chance to be above-average major league pitches. He has a little deception. Some people call his fastball an invisible. He just kind of hides the ball for a long time before coming to the plate. And he can miss a lot of bats. He was in high this year, like I said. And he'll probably start in double-A Bowie. And he's a guy, if he pitches really well, you could see him late for a cup of coffee in 2018.
Okay, so moving ahead to number seven, this is the first position player we've seen, and this is a guy a lot of Orioles fans probably remember because he was a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago, and that's DJ Stewart.
Okay, so DJ Stewart, you know, a lot of people were, you know, criticizing the Orioles for picking DJ Stewart, especially when he came out, and he struggled in his first minor league appearances. The Orioles just kept promoting him, though. And he's really improved, and he had a very strong season in Double-A Bowie last year, with 20 home runs and I believe 21 home runs and 20 stolen bases. So one of the few 2020 guys in the minors. So what caused him to struggle early on is he came out of college in Florida State with extreme crouch stance. So he was low to the ground. He had his bat way up high. It was a really funky stance, and scouts didn't like it at all. And it took him a while to really adjust that to something that would work at the pro level. But he's got it now, and he even said so in a midseason interview in 2017 that, you know, finally he felt like he can just go to the plate and focus on hitting. And when he can just focus on hitting, he's a smart hitter. He knows how to hit. He's got good patience in the box. He's a guy that's going to give you some on-base percentage. He's going to take a walk. He's going to make pitchers work. He's got enough power to, you know, possibly hit 20 home runs in the majors if he's making enough contact. On defense, he's a left fielder only, really. He doesn't have a very strong arm, but he's pretty fast out there, and he can run the ball down. He takes good routes. And like I said, he's a hardworking, kind of grinded-out type of player that Buck Showalter likes. I could see him helping the Orioles as early as later this year. I mean, if they didn't need a left-handed outfielder to play all three spots as a fourth outfielder, I think he'd have a legit shot out of spring training.
And where are we going to see him start the year most likely? In AAA?
Yeah, Triple A. Yeah, he's done all he needs to do in AA. He tore it up in 2017 and he's ready for AAA. I'd say he's probably, you know, if the Orioles weren't trying to compete this year, he'd be ready and have Mancini in left field already. He'd be ready to start in the majors.
So, of course, if we see things go south in a hurry this year and they're completely out of it by, you know, June, you definitely think you could see him up at that point?
Yeah, you could definitely see him at some point in time. If someone goes down because of injury or, you know, ineffectiveness or, you know, the season's out and we trade someone. Yeah, he's a guy that would be ready to go. When I saw him play, he just strikes me as a guy that's going to figure out whatever pitcher he's facing. You know, he doesn't have the best tools out there of all the guys. He's not tooled up like Austin Hayes, but he knows how to hit. He knows how to read pitches. He knows how to lay off bad pitches. And, you know, he's going to give most pitchers a hard time.
All right, well, number six on your list is another outfielder also drafted by the Orioles in 2015, but a very different kind of player, and that's Cedric Mullins. You want to tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, so Cedric Mullins is one of those later-round sleeper guys. They got him in the 13th round back in 2015. He's a small guy. He's 5'8" tall. and that may be a generous number, but he has legit above average power. I mean, he really generates a ton of power. He's a strong guy. He's very muscular. And the ball just carries off his bat. It has a different kind of sound than most guys. And his strongest tool is his glove. He plays center field. He's at least going to be average to above average center fielder. So that gives him a pretty high upside as a fourth or fifth outfielder. But there's a chance for more. He's a switch hitter, and from the left-hand side, he's got a really smooth, easy swing that generates power. The right-hand side, that's the issue right now, is his swing on the right-hand side is a little bit stiffer, a little bit more awkward, not as much bat speed, and he's struggled against lefties because of that. If he's going to be more than a platoon guy, he's either going to need to drop switch hitting or improve that right-handed swing. So that's really going to decide whether he's, you know, a fourth outfielder or a platoon guy that's going to help you there at the major league level, or if he's a, you know, an above-average starter.
Right, and you said he was in Double-A last year, right?
Yes, he was in Double-A. He missed some time with some hamstring injuries. It slowed him down. He didn't steal many bases last year, but that is part of his game when he's healthy. He's fast. He's a plus runner. So he can help you on the base pass. He can help you in center field. If you're looking at ESPN or MLB.com highlight, he already made a highlight reel catch in center field in one of the Orioles spring training games. So I would suggest that you check that out if you haven't seen it yet. He can really catch the ball out there.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that video in the show notes, too, for people who want to check that out. All right, so number five, making our way into the top five in your prospect list, yet another left-handed pitcher, and this guy's pretty young, 19-year-old, D.L. Hall. What can you tell us about him?
So D.L. Hall, was the Orioles' 21st draft pick, or 21st overall draft pick, their first-round pick in 2017. The Orioles didn't expect him to be there from everything I've heard, but they were happy to snatch him up when he fell to them. He's not a big guy. He's not that prototypical 6'4", you know, high school projectable prospect, but he already hits the mid-90s from the left-hand side. I've seen where he's touched 96, 97, and he gets that velocity fairly easily. He's a very athletic pitcher, and he has one of the best curveballs in the entire 2017 draft. So that's two plus pitches right there. He still needs to work on his changeup. Like, you know, he's got a lot of developmental time left since he was just drafted out of high school. But he kind of reminds me of almost like a left-handed Hunter Harvey when Hunter Harvey was drafted before he got hurt. You know, plus fastball, curveball combo, athletic guy, you know, a lot of upside there. Orioles aren't going to see him for a long time. He needs a lot of development, but that's a lot of developmental clay to work with right there.
Where do you expect to see him this year? What level? He'd be single A?
I think they'll probably start him in low A with Delmarva. They're probably going to try to, I'm not sure exactly how many innings they want to give him right off the bat. He didn't pitch a lot at the pro level last year once he was drafted. So they're working on his mechanics a little bit. But I would imagine he's going to start in low A, and he might see high Frederick if he pitches well.
All right, well, number four, this is a guy you've mentioned already. That's Hunter Harvey, and he's somebody who I think anybody listening to this podcast is familiar with Hunter Harvey. He's been a prospect for a long time, was drafted in 2013. So fans have heard about him for a long time. And you mentioned he's been through a lot of injuries and things, but he's still there pretty high on your list, number four. What realistically can we expect from Hunter Harvey?
Okay, so Harvey's really interesting because, I mean, the Orioles drafted him and he came out really strong and he jumped all the way onto top 100 list. He was looking like, you know, a potential, you know, top of the rotation or towards the top of the rotation guy. but then it was injury after injury. First, he got hit with a ball and fractured his shin, and then he had hernia surgery. And then finally he had Tommy John surgery. So he's missed an awful lot of time, and you know, a lot of fans probably have written him off, like this guy's never gonna make it. But similar to Dylan Bundy, he's now coming back from Tommy John surgery. He's healthy now, and he pitched a few competitive innings in 2017. And unlike Dylan Bundy, all of his stuff, all of his velocity, all of his movement was back right away. Bundy, if you saw scouting reports of him before his Tommy John surgery, you know, he was an upper 90s guy. He's not that guy anymore. Harvey is back touching 97 miles per hour with life on his fastball in his first few competitive innings after coming back. His plus curveball was back as well. And the best part about it is he was getting to that velocity and stuff with much less effort. He's added some good weight. He looks strong. He's got a strong lower half. And his delivery is a lot easier on the arm now. So I think that bodes well for his future, both his ability to throw strikes and his ability to stay healthy. You know, there's some risk there because he's come off of so many injuries and he hasn't thrown a ton of competitive innings. But, I mean, he looks like a major league pitcher right now. I mean, he's got a major league body. He's got major league stuff. He just needs a little bit of time to learn how to work batters again because he hasn't had a lot of competitive innings. So I expect to see him start maybe in high A or double A, and I'd like to see him spend the whole season in the minors to polish his changeup, his third pitch, and to, you know, learn how to get advanced hitters out before getting called up. But, you know, Buck has talked about possibly using him as a reliever. You know, I believe Duquette has talked about using him as a reliever at some point. I mean, it's going to be tempting for the Orioles to try to, especially if they go into the season and start winning some games, to try to use him right now because, I mean, the stuff is there.
Yeah, he's one of the more intriguing prospects on this list for sure. And I think you said the thing that you think he could possibly be ready to compete for a rotation spot in 2019. And I think that's a very exciting prospect for Orioles fans, knowing how badly this team needs starting pitching. The idea that he may be that close to being able to help is really exciting. Well, speaking of exciting, number three on your list is Ryan Mountcastle. He's a really intriguing player, and I think a lot of fans have become kind of interested in what his future may be. What do you think about him?
So Mountcastle, he's probably got the highest upside bat in the system. The guy can really hit. He's got great bat speed. I mean, he can hit any velocity. He's one of those guys, you can throw 100 to him and he can pull it. He's that kind of guy. And he's relatively thin right now. He's, you know, 6'3", 195. He has some room to add some weight. He's just going to be 21 the entire 2018 season. So he's got, you know, he's very young. He hit a ton of doubles last year between single A Frederick and double A Bowie. I'm going to see those balls going out of the park soon as he gets stronger because he's just got so much bat speed. He's got a nice loft to his swing. So the ball naturally goes in the air and, you know, a little bit more strength. And this is a guy, if you had to ask me, you know, what guy in the Orioles minor league system has a chance to be a 40 home run guy, it would be Mountcastle. You know, he's not there yet. He's got some development to do, even with the bat. If you see him in spring training this year, you'll probably see some pitchers that are a lot older and more advanced than him, you know, work him around with some off-speed pitchers. But I think that's going to come around. I'm not too worried about that. I think he's going to be, you know, a guy that's going to hit for some average and power. The big question with him is defensive position, how good he's going to be, where he's going to play. The Orioles are trying him at third base after moving him off shortstop. He's got the hands and the agility to play an infield position, but his arm is pretty poor. I'm not sure if it's the mechanics or the arm strength or both, but he has trouble making consistent throws across the diamond. So as of right now, I would say his most likely position to end up would be left field. The only problem is the Orioles have a lot of, you know, Mancini's in left field now. DJ Stewart is a left field prospect. They have a lot of outfielders, so it'd be nice if he could stay in the infield, but something's going to have to change if that's going to happen.
All right, so number two on the list, this is a guy, again, that I think anybody listening to this is going to be well familiar with, and that is Chance Sisko. Where do things stand with Chance Sisko? And I know the big question about him has been for a while whether he was going to be able to stick at catcher. So what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so first with his chances to stick at catcher, I know a lot of people are down about his chances to stick at catcher. I know Buck especially is very big on controlling the running game. I personally don't think that's as big of a part of catcher defense as you know, being able to frame a pitch and be able to receive well, call a good game, block pitches. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a good catch and throw guy that's going to throw out 30, 40, 50% of base runners. It's probably going to be down in the 20s range, but he's improved a lot in his ability to receive the ball well, to get strikes called for his pitchers, to be quiet behind the plate, to block pitches. That's improved significantly. And if you watch him play, he's an athletic guy. He's a converted shortstop. He didn't start playing catcher until I think it was his senior year of high school. So I think there is more improvement yet to come. With throwing out runners, it's kind of just a slow release is his biggest problem. The arm is okay. The arm's not bad. But he has a little bit of trouble getting the ball out of his hand fast and accurately.
All right, so finally, number one on the list is a guy who I think it's accurate to say he has really climbed up the charts for the Orioles, and he actually ended up playing a little with the Orioles in September, and that's Austin Hayes. What do you think about him? What are his long-term prospects and his short-term prospects? Where is he going to be in 2018?
He coming out of Jacksonville University, the Orioles picked him out in the third round. And in 2016. So he made it to the majors extremely fast, faster than anyone else in the entire draft class for any team. Coming out of college, he was labeled kind of a tweener guy. He didn't have enough power, scouts thought, for a corner outfield spot, and wasn't quite good enough defensively for a center field spot. But he silenced those concerns. He had 32 home runs in the minors last year and hit another one in the majors after he got called up. He's hit 330 with a 370 on base percentage and a 576 slugging percentage in his minor league at bats. I mean, he's dominated every level. He's a five tool type of guy. He's got above average everything. And the carrying tool with him is his ability to manipulate the bat. He's a guy that can make hard contact with pitches that, you know, most people are swinging through. He has a kind of a special ability to do that, and that allows him to, you know, to hit everything hard, hit for a high average, and also puts them in stands. Hayes' weakness is that he's an aggressive player. I mean, he's a fun guy to watch. He plays 110%. But that hurts him sometimes, you know, against someone with good breaking pitches at the plate. He swings very aggressively. And in the field, he sometimes will go for balls that they can't even catch. He's just trying hard every play. So I think that's going to endear him with fans, but he needs to kind of get that aggression under control. I think that's going to happen. He hasn't spent much time in the minors, so. You know, I think he's going to, with a little bit more experience, tighten those things up. In the short term, he's competing for the right field job for the Orioles. Now, whether he gets it or not remains to be seen. is going to be kind of a numbers game, especially if they try to keep Anthony Santander on the roster, which they need to do for 44 days to keep control of him and not have to offer him back because of his Rule 5 status. So my prediction for 2018 is that Hayes is going to start the season in AAA. He's going to stay down there until Santander exhausts his Rule 5 eligibility, 44 days in, and then he'll probably come up and be your everyday right fielder. And as far as future potential, the range of outcomes for Hayes, I don't see him being less than an average major leaguer. I think he's going to lock down a starting spot for years to come. The only question is whether he will, you know, rein in his aggressive nature, learn to take a walk or two, and maybe be a well above average right fielder rather than just, you know, a starter.
Right. Yeah. It will be really exciting to see what happens with him. It's, you know, the Orioles don't necessarily have a ton of great prospects all the time. So it's nice to see that. I think for the first time in a while, look, the future looks kind of bright, in, at least in terms of some of these guys. So look, hopefully we can have you back during the season to talk about some of these guys and beyond the top 10 as well into those next 40 and just chart the progress of the players as the season goes through.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd be happy to.
You can find Luke on Twitter. His handle is the_Luke_Siler. S-I-L-E-R. And please join us next time when our guest will be Kyle Andrews, who's the Orioles beat reporter for Fox Sports 1340 AM.